Drew and Leslie, get the shit on. Interracial John, shut the fuck up and listen. Interracial John, interracial John, interracial shit motherfuckers, shut up and listen. Drew and Leslie, interracial John.
And welcome to the Interracial Dawn Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined as always.
My very white guy.
And you're very white indeed.
But you can call me Drew.
I can.
Please do.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm you know, I'm good. We're about to have a little bit of a you and me time, a little road trip.
Road
take it easy.
Trip.
Long holiday weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm here for that.
All of that.
I don't think I'm ready to share it with people. I don't know if this is really a vacation because you're working.
No, I was going to say it's not a vacation.
It is for me.
It's a
little bit of time off for moi.
For me, I'll be working the whole time.
For moi.
So, yeah.
I mean, I got to work. I got to get us there in one piece.
Yeah, you know, true.
There's like efforts.
Efforts.
But I was going to say the vacation song, dude.
Oh no, we can't send any vacation.
No, that's too much for the Johnners.
Nope,
not letting in on that. Gotta keep a couple things close to the chest.
Only people that go on vacation with us get to hear.
Oh, other people get to hear.
We've sang it for other people.
We have.
Yeah, people we've gone on vacation with.
All right, okay.
Maybe we'll sing it in November.
I'll just put a pin in it. Okay.
Put a little teaser. Yeah.
There's a verse about sleeping and fucking all night.
It's a vacation.
It's a vacation song.
Well, if this is your first time joining us, welcome. And
thank you.
You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search for Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. And we'd love it if you subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher as well. You can find us also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope at Interracial John. And we super duper love feedback.
Definitely.
We love
Bring it.
It. We love it. We love it. We love it. And you can leave us feedback on either iTunes or Stitcher. And if it's 5 stars, we will read it here on the air.
You can if it's also, 5 stars, I'm not fuck ass crazy.
Yeah. And you can also email. I'm not even putting that caveat because we don't get enough to have that caveat.
Not yet. No fuck ass
crazy. We haven't
crazy
earned
ones.
The no fuck ass one. Not for 5-star reviews. For emails and voicemails, yes, but not for that one. Anyways, you can email us also at interracialjohn@gmail.com, or you can pick up your phone and dial 657 Johnners at 657 JAWNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes, we will play it here on the air. Shout out to Rod and Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips for our
feedback.
General feedback. Yeah.
You know, I gotta be honest. Like, when I was a kid, like, getting your voice on the radio, like, if I could call into a radio and they would play it, like, that'd be like the shit. Like, that would be like a really big thing to me. Like,
well, I'll tell you this. I would have never even thought about doing a podcast or wanting to had I not had called into the Black Guy Who Tips several times. I was like, I kind of liked that. Like, it was kind of cool. And then that I had that when Rod and I made that bet, he had me call live with him and Justin on Balls Deep Sports.
I do remember
Friday.
That as well.
And I was like, oh, that was really fun. So,
did you pay him with PayPal? How'd you pay him?
Yes, I did pay him with PayPal.
You know what would have been not like better, but like I've always wanted to, and it just maybe this
just
is
then
like,
just pennies.
Yeah, dude, like super
That's
petty, like
petty.
Box of fucking pennies, just
and
like
put,
duct
like,
tape together.
Pennies.
Something, dude. Maybe. Not ass pennies, just regular pennies.
Yeah, I wanted to. I didn't have time to do it, so I couldn't have done
it. That's got to be like a $32
like it's way more than $20, so that's the other thing.
But
like,
it would be funny as fuck, too.
Is a petty worth that much? I'm not too sure. Anyways, we did have some emails this week.
Is that a review?
No,
just emails.
It's just emails. Right. We got 2 emails, actually. But we don't complain about that.
We don't.
You can send us any
you do not
you
complain here to John.
I love emails, so how about that? To Drew and Leslie. Oh, actually, to Leslie and Drew, sorry. I have been really enjoying the last few eps, and even the guest spots, y'all have been popping across the podcast sphere. Good on you guys. Thank you. I just want to chime in on a couple of things brought up on the last show. Drew is right. You are not truly anonymous on the internet. It is very pseudo. That Google machine is real deal and quite annoying to me personally. I personally use my Gmail for junk, family, and secondary social media accounts. Mm. But the stuff that they have pulled out of my emails I've sent and are sent to me is just scary. I know you guys have been covering the election and everything, but this week I got stuck into the rabbit hole, which got me into research mode. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but here's the date I was thinking of. And she has a link to missing voters. Why is no one talking about how from 2008 to 2012, 40 million registered voters just disappeared? Oof. I saw only one article that touched on the subject saying 35.4 million people move in 2011 and between 2011 and 2012, but that happens every year, and 70% of these people move within the state they're already registered. Every election year prior to 2012, register voters go up a little, sometimes a lot, like in 2008. Is it because of the voter rights appeal, ID laws coming into effect, or just a lot of people dying? I personally don't get it. Most importantly, I don't think that 40 million people just drop has been made up since 2012. That's it. Hiroja.
Hiroja. Oh, all right.
I didn't know about that.
First of all, I'm no longer taking it. It's been not quite two years. We're coming on 100 episodes. It's been long. It's been almost 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So I'm no longer bone of contention. But Leslie and Drew, you had to correct it. You can't leave it in Drew and Leslie.
That's what they wrote.
I know. I'm
teasing. I didn't correct it. I read it wrong. I said Drew and Leslie. Oh, you know what? You know, the thing that came to my mind was Drew and Leslie. And you're in here complaining about it?
Mm. I'll complain to Hiroja.
Whatever.
But first of all, the Google machines, abso-fucking-lutely.
Yeah.
Like,
abso-smurfing. That's what I said. I was like, nobody's anonymous. No,
I think there's going to be, I imagine in our lifetime, very soon, like, I think you could do this now, but I imagine it will be like checking your credit report. They'll be like, you know, check my Google profile.
Yeah, Google.
And it's going to tell you what they think about you.
Yeah.
And I've had scary as fuck.
I bet they already have it.
Oh, yeah, no.
I bet at the upper. I mean, listen, I'll tell you this. The data's there.
Sure.
They have it.
Oh, somebody's written it. Sure.
Somebody's written it. Somebody has the data. And then what happens there is just the fact that those people that did it know it, that causes something. Like, I feel like, I don't know, it's just, once it's there, I feel like it already starts to be a problem.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be, A, it's been there, and it's been there a long time, right. And I think that we don't know what's there, and that's kind of, like, frightening. Like, they're making, you know, they're shaping a lot of things around you based on what they think they know about you, and what they think they know about you is based on some sort of purview that, you know, whether it's limited, complete, who knows what. But, yeah, I think there's going to be a government mandated, you have to be able to provide some sort of way for consumers once a year to go in and, like, you know, data dump. They're like, this is what we have on you. And it's just going to be like, oh my fucking Jesus Christ. Like, nope, I don't want to know that. I'm okay without knowing that. Like, and I, you know, I don't even, I'm not aggressive with it, but you can do all sorts of, like, you know, ghost this, private that, you know, there's different search engines. One's called, I think DuckDuck Search maybe, that don't do, what do you call it? Like, they don't track. And oh, this isn't even in the notes.
Wow.
You and I were talking about taking a trip. We're talking about our anniversary.
Yep.
And it's many months away.
Yes.
But we live in Grand Rapids, which is a small town. So the normal, like, airline game is based on, like, you know, how many seats and at what price point, and there's this algorithm, like, when it's the best time to buy a ticket, and that usually holds true if you live in, like, kind of a hub or near a hub, or you're flying out of a hub, like, you can use that assumptive. But because there's only, like, one flight out of Grand Rapids that, like, is going to do the thing that we want to do, we're, like, kind of monitoring it. We know how many seats are available, and we've got a price watch, right? Yeah, there's, like, sophisticated, again, like, you know, Kayak. If people don't know this, like, when you're trying to get a ticket, I think Kayak is great, but there's other ones, Airfare Watch and various ones. And they'll send you an email. Hey, the leg you're looking at.
Airfare Watchdog, that's the one.
Yeah, hey, you're looking for this flight. You know, this is the lowest price it's been at this time. This is what we think is going to be the best price. And it'll ping you an email when it gets below a certain level. And for you and I, we were like, well, you know, flying out of Grand Rapids is going to be the most convenient. Anything else is going to require us to, like, on both ends of a vacation, drive 3 hours to, like, Chicago or Detroit or something else. Like, that's just not desirable. So that to us has, like, a pretty good value. Like just driving the 3 hours to Chicago has a fixed cost of like gas and tolls and parking the car. Like, and then it's a hassle. Like, so we had in our mind, like this is you're never going to see the price below this. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is like just no way it's going to be below this point here. And my alert thing pinged me that it was like $14 over what I thought was the like almost impossible price point, right? So I'm like, oh, we got to buy this ticket. We got to buy it right fucking now. And it was weird. It was out on one airline and back on another, right? So it's leaving on United, coming back on Delta. And it's specifically something that I think they call it hacker fares on Kayak and other things. But anyway, we get it up and we just did the one search with Kayak. So we're like, okay, these seats, these prices, let's check on the actual website. You go to United, I'll go to Delta. We do the search. Oh, great. It's, you know, almost the same price, maybe like a dollar different. We'll just buy it through the airline. You're doing yours. I'm doing mine. And I'm picking the seats, literally pick the seat. And I go to hit like close to go to payout. And it just gives me the pinwheel of death. Starts spinning.
Right.
And it borked out. It did something. I was like, bloop, you know, I'm like, oh, fucking son of a bitch. So now there's a search we did on Kayak, a seat that I just sort of reserved on Delta. You know, like there's an algorithm, like there's only X number of seats they're going to sell at this price. And we've just locked up like inadvertently five of them, right? Like you bought, you know what I'm saying? Like we were trying to buy two and we locked up a bunch of them and then we couldn't get it back. And it was like, I had to wait a good, like, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes for the one seat to be released. And so that shit, like they're not stupid with it, the way they work that stuff. And, you know, I'm not like opposed to it. I don't know like exactly what evil carnate is going to happen from it. I'm sure something untoward that we're all not going to be happy with if it hasn't already been done.
Exactly. That's what you really should be asking yourself.
It's probably too late. It's probably way too late.
I think it's definitely too
late. There's countries like Germany and like I forget other places in the EU that just they kind of like hate Google. Like, oh, no. You can't do that here.
Right.
like all sorts of Google shit. It's like, nope. Yeah. Mm-mm. They're the only country so far that sued Microsoft on the antitrust shit. It was the EU, I think.
Yeah, they did. They're very serious about their security, I think. They need to be. It's like the only thing they have over lots of other places. Like, it's hard to secure things when you don't have a lot of funds.
I hear.
Well, anyways.
Thank you, Roja. Thank you, Roja.
And then we get a second email who is a listener from Nill Valley, California. And she says, I'm the black mom of two beautiful biracial girls, ages 12 and 7. I grew up in Mississippi and I remember watching Roots with my family. It was pretty traumatizing and a lot to take in as a kid. And I just want to know what other interracial parents think about it. Should we watch this with our kids? I have a nagging fear/guilt that I'm letting down Team Black Girl from the South by letting my girls skip out on the new Roots reboot. I'd love to know what y'all think. Cheers. Ooh,
that's tough and heavy, and we don't have kids, so just full disclosure,
we don't have
non-parents.
Children, so we would just be giving our adult-ass opinions that have no basis in any parenting technique or leg to stand on. So I'll preface it with all that. I don't know too much about the new Roots TV show. I haven't seen anything about it. Let me just see if I can pull up anything about it. Roots. Miniseries. All right, there we go. Maybe there's a...
Yeah, I was thinking maybe there's some other ways you could get into...
All right, here's a trailer.
All right.
So let's listen to that.
You must hear your name first. You are Kunta Kinte, son of Omoran Binta Kinte. You must always honor your ancestors, the ones who love you and watch over you.
It's time your family paid, Kunta.
Run!
Fire! 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 F Jump! Jump!
I own this property, boy. And everything on it.
There is no South without slavery.
But God is my witness. I say you, even if he part you tomorrow, your love, it will never die.
A name is who you is. My daddy took whippings night and day to protect his name.
Speak to me, Lord! Speak to me, Lord!
You think I don't know he my daddy?
If you ever touch just one, I'll kill you.
You brought this upon yourself and upon your poor family.
No! You brought it on my family! No, don't take it with me!
But there's a brand new show for you to watch today. So all the Western eyes turn the kids over away. Where your careless mistake was there's new age. We are what we made.
You just never knew it.
Your name is your spirit. Your name is your shield.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll say I think that the 12-year-old would probably be fine to watch it. Obviously, I don't know your exact 12-year-old, but from 12-year-olds that I've known, I feel like it's something, it has concepts that they would already have been introduced to in multiple different ways. And, you know, they would have the context. The seven, I don't know so much. I think that's a little bit more possible that if you know your 7-year-old and they're a mature 7-year-old, maybe, but I know a lot of 7-year-olds that, you know, shift younger. And I would say that maybe not, but I do think it looks interesting, but T.I.'s in it. So I don't know about that.
I was thinking you could go, especially with the 7-year-old, you could introduce maybe a different, like into that same topic with a different movie or different something into it, so it's not quite, you know, that's like, I don't say the first, like, I don't know, I'm not trying to presume what you have or haven't done with your kids, but there are other things I think maybe you could do leading up to it, and if there's some, you know, you could gauge interest and it wasn't traumatizing. Again, that, you know, your children pretty well, sort of like put your toe in the water before maybe taking them like opening night to the new roots, maybe. I don't know, like what was we did the movie review, Imitation of Life, right? So that addresses race, mm-hmm, yep. You know, and not nearly as, you know, it's a little bit whitewashed.
No, I think that's way heavier.
You think it's heavier? It's deeper.
For a biracial child, it would be incredibly heavy.
Oh, shit. Oh, stop. I forgot. Like, you're no right. Way. Nope. My bad. Nope. Sorry. No. You're right. That was very white of me. My bad.
So white, babe.
Sorry.
Like, no.
You're right. I apologize.
No. Definitely not.
You're right. Mm-mm. Not that at all.
No. But thanks for writing in.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I guess we'll probably watch it because I think Feminista Jones went to the premiere of it the other night, so maybe she'll be posting a review. If she does, we'll definitely make sure we share it and let people know what she thought, because she has a wonderful son and she would certainly be talking about whether it would be appropriate or not, for sure.
All right. Cool beans. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to say it's kind of strange, this thing I got in the mail. It's from the DNC. It says official 2016 Democratic election survey. And I say strange because it's addressed to me, and you live here as well. And we're both registered.
That's true.
And we both got registered at the, like, what do they call it? The Secretary of State, DMV, whatever it is here.
Yeah.
Like, so we did everything identically the same.
Correct.
We both voted.
We did.
Right?
We voted.
So anyway, it's a survey. And it's like, you know, please fill it out and check your name. And there's a bunch of, like, you know, very typical things like, you know, don't forget to include your donation and all kinds of stuff. But there was, like, maybe 3 different parts. So part one's personal information. Part two's the Republican threat. So it's like, what elements of the radical Republican agenda are most dangerous to the American future? It's like, you know, choose up to three. And, you know, I'm not saying the radical Republican agenda is specifically and directly attacking black folks, but black folks aren't mentioned in this at all. And there's a lot of other groups, women and elderly, LGBT. Same thing. What aspects of Donald Trump, Ted Cruz do you find most disturbing? You know, some maybe are close to addressing black folk with uncivilized campaign rhetoric, but foreign policy, women's reproductive, LGBT, you know, Affordable Care Act, very, you know, just various things. And there's like three other sections, and not a one has anything to do with anything black. Not a one.
Not just not black, or just not race.
Not race. Okay. Not a one. Not zero zip. Nada. This is like their survey, right? This is like, what are the Democratic election priorities? And like, I'll read you the priorities. Passing comprehensive immigration reform. And these aren't bad things. I'm not saying these are bad. Please. Okay, right now, John, just hear me out. I'm not saying these things are bad. And I'm not saying it's a zero-sum game. I'm not saying you can't do one and the other and this or that. I'm saying this to highlight the fact that it's like, it's not even like, it's beyond not an afterthought. It's just not here at all. But they have a lot of things, you know, comprehensive immigration reform, closing the gender pay gap, protecting Social Security, Medicare, enacting sensible laws to combat gun violence, raising the minimum wage, leveling the playing field for middle class families, protecting the environment, reforming our criminal justice system, providing every American with access to world class education, expanding voting rights, keeping our country safe. And mind you, many of these things impact black people. And I don't know what would specifically address race, maintaining our nation's international relationships. But it's just, I don't know. I thought it weird that it seemed at this time in particular, I don't know, auspiciously absent. Is that the right word? I don't know what you would, I don't know what you would put in a survey to like specifically like talk about race, but like, I don't know what, how about like race, you know, address race issues? Why can't that be an issue? Right? Like address the racial inequality, you know? And they, like I said, some of the things, you know, like it's basically the Bernie Sanders mantra, right? It's a lot of the like, you know, inequality and the minimum wage and, you know, criminal justice. And these are all absolutely, those are all systems that disproportionately impact black people. But that doesn't like, you know, stop supremacy per se.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm not trying to say like, hey, that, you know, there's a maybe like a, in terms of a triage, like there's a wound, the criminal justice system, perhaps, that's pretty grievous. And you know, changing that might be worthwhile. I don't know. I'm not that individual decider or whatever. But like I said, it just seemed auspiciously absent. And then it came to me and not you.
Well, you know, everybody cares what you think, I guess.
Hey, I'm a man.
Mm-hmm. So I came across a couple things on the interwebs.
Oh boy.
That I thought you might appreciate.
Okay.
The first of which is a map that tells what each state Googles the most.
Oh, Jiminy.
And so I thought we could take a look. You could call out a few places and we could see what the hell peoples are fucking Googling out here in these streets.
Okay.
So what's a state you'd like to know? How about the one we're in?
Let's see here. How about... Yeah, let's do Michigan. Start with Michigan.
Now, before we do that, let me just get it together here. It's the autofill function. That's what happened. This is what it is.
Okay.
Google's autofill function is what they're doing it. There's even a game available that you can do playing with that to guess what it's going to say. Anyways, so the latest creation of a map that shows which question each state has Googled more than every other state. So it's not the thing that they Google the most, but it's the question that they've Googled more than all the other ones. I just want to be clear.
It's the autofill. I gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
That's how the predictive, like, is this what you're thinking? Because most people think this.
Correct. No. A lot of people probably think that, but I guess I mean to say that, like, probably if you look, it's not necessarily the top searched question in that state. I'm making a distinction here. If that, are you understand what I'm saying? It's not the top asked question in each state.
I understand.
It's the, okay, you got it. Okay?
Yep.
Okay. It's the question that they Googled more than all the other states.
Got it.
Okay. Comparing them to one another. Okay. So let's see. Here in Michigan, apparently, we want to know the most, is Mr. T dead?
In Michigan? Yes. But why?
More people want to know that here than any other place anywhere else in the country.
But, mm-hmm. But why?
So let's go to some other ones. How about Texas? Texas asks more than any other state, where is the internet? That's what they want to know there.
And I bet you they want to know where the internet is so they can protect it. So they can come out with guns and fucking make sure that the terrorists aren't getting there.
Right.
We need to protect the internet. Where is it? I don't know, dude. I think it's here in Texas somewhere. Let's ride. We're the new riders of the Purple Sage Internet Protective Crew.
Sadly, Florida always asks, why does everyone hate Florida more than anybody?
They do not.
That's their question.
Why does everyone hate Florida?
Yes. So just to be just
that would, of course, that would be the thing that Floridians would, because I wouldn't bother. Like, I would just hate Florida. Like, fuck Florida. Like, I'm not going to Google why does everyone hate Florida. Like, I fucking hate Florida.
The point about that is that no other state's like that concerned about their own. Like, can you know?
You know, for a state that's one twister away from the trailer double wide flipping over and being a disaster, you know, you're awful concerned why people think you suck so much.
Why do I suck so much? All right, New Mexico, they want to know how to be emo in New Mexico. Oklahoma, just keeping it fresh, or 2008 asks, is Obama Muslim? They want to know.
Which state is this?
Oklahoma.
Sure. Oklahoma. All right. Get with it, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, this is an interesting one. Kansas wants to know how to make meth. And I don't know. I don't know.
See, now that's what I would have thought would have been fucking like New
Aren't
Mexico.
Are we going through Kansas soon? I'm a little worried. Missouri, also concerning with, am I a psycho? Really?
They're going to Google, am I?
Wow.
What's the answer? What are they going to get? Like, yes. What if there was some, like, Google Easter egg trick
now.
And you Googled, am I a psycho? Like, and, like, the whole screen started, like, twisted and melted. And, like, bling, 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 bling.
Ask Siri. See what she said.
They're on their way. Lay down.
Roll on the ground. let's see. Of course, Arkansas is very concerned about, who won a civil war?
Wait a minute.
Who won?
Arkansas. Y'all smarter than that, mm-hmm. dude.
Louisiana, they're very practical. They just want to know, when is WrestleMania? That's it. Now, I don't know.
Wait a minute. Not like, when is WrestleMania in town? When is WrestleMania on TV? When is WrestleMania 16 or 38 or 79? Just blanket, when is WrestleMania?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
They should be proud of that.
Heading over to Mississippi. I mean, I didn't know this gentleman made such an impact here, but they really want to know who killed Tupac. They're very concerned about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Who killed Tupac?
Now, Tennessee is another one I'm concerned, because what is the clap? That shouldn't be your state question.
Like, as in, like, chlamydia?
Yeah, what is the clap?
Like, number one, the thing that they look for more than any other state is STD clap.
Mm-hmm.
And which state is this?
This is Tennessee.
Okay. Oh, so we visited. I'm glad we were together. So if you're in Tennessee, there's Gatlinburg, there's the Blue Mountain. Let's just there. Double wrap it. Just wrap it up.
Yeah.
Wrap it up. There's mm-hmm. apparently a lot of clap in Tennessee. And people don't know what it is. So you got to be extra careful. Like, I'm not saying, like, that's like a really bad thing, but, like, okay, surgeon, okay, whatever. But, like, they're saying, what is it? Not like, do I have, what are the symptoms? How do you contract? How do you, what's the prognosis? You know, what do I have to do? Just, like, straight up, what is it? Yeah. I guess maybe they don't know it's an STD.
I guess not.
If you don't know, like, because that clap's kind of an old euphemism for chlamydia.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my fucking God. Tell me you were with us where that fucking dude at the place talked about the clap and the rifle. Were you? Oh Jesus! I haven't even
what
told
are
you this.
Talking about?
Oh my God! I've never told you this.
What
oh
are you
my
talking
God.
About right now?
So you remember how? Oh my God! It's Tennessee! Holy fuck! I can't believe it. This is too much. This is
what?
Too much. When we went to Gatlinburg for my mom's 70th birthday, and we had the like cabin and shit, and
yeah,
then for her birthday specifically, me and my brothers took her. So the
oh,
boys
yeah.
took
you
her
guys
to
went to the Breakers, right?
The Breakers. The who owned that? The
I don't know.
Vanderbilts,
one of,
I think.
Yeah, one
but
of those
it's in
crazy
I think
families.
North Carolina, maybe?
South Carolina.
South Carolina.
I think.
Okay. Well, it's not quite Tennessee. It's like right over, like Asheville
yeah,
or whatever.
It's Asheville. Yeah.
So we're on the tour. And like, of course, because I'm extra and it's my mom and like we want to do like special. We got the like docent like super tour and she was really kind of, I want to say like difficult, but I made her get a wheelchair. I was like, listen, give me like a 3-hour tour. Just please, please. And she's like, I'm just embarrassed. I'm like, just don't worry about it. Just sit in a wheelchair. Just do it. So we're in the wheelchair and like now we've got like, you know, all time and she can ask all these questions. And the tour guy's being really kind of polite and nice and he's young and he's kind of doing his job. And somewhere towards the end, and I don't know if mom was still there, he literally talks about one of the Vanderbilts getting the clap, right? Or getting chlamydia or something. And then proceeds to tell a story that he purports as the etymology of the euphemism clap for chlamydia, like where that came from, like the derivation, like how clap came to be.
Called the clap.
Called chlamydia came to be the clap. And I'm not going to say that this is real or purported as truth because it was just absurd. But it literally was something about World War One or Two and fucking men and getting STDs and they'd smack the rifle on the end of their penis and a fucking like, you know, pus or something came out. They had the clap and it was called the clap because of the sound the butt of the rifle made. But it was really the most like obtuse, like, and you know me, I love fucking like crazy fucking like weird ass shit.
But
like
that
this
doesn't sound like
it. Of course
true.
It's not. Of course I instantly heard it and I go, that's I'm not, in fact, John, maybe you can do a little sleuthing, you know, like reverse Snopes, find out how the clap came to be known as the clap. Why is chlamydia called the clap? What's the you know, derivation of that euphemism, idiom? What's the word I'm thinking
well,
of?
Well, it says that
drum roll, please.
It says it may refer to a rather primitive treatment for gonorrhea. It says men at sea in the 1700s, miles away from any sort of medical professional, one man with the fondness of visiting prostitutes while on land has persistent burning pain when he urinates and notices pus seeping from his urethra. His fellow sailors recognize the symptoms as they've all had similar issues even after particularly bawdy times ashore. How do they help him? By taking two paddles and clapping the suffering man's penis between them, of course.
Oh, so there is some truth to it. Golly,
I mean,
gross.
Wouldn't
ew.
Any good friend do that? And the goal of the clapping, by the way, was to expel the discharge from the penis.
Yeah, but like, okay. So there is some nugget of truth to this. Why would you tell that on a fucking tour of my ninth place? Like, it was the me and my brothers. Like,
and the other
what? Like,
they
are
had,
you
there is
me?
Another possible one. The other plausible, the less amusing reason for gonorrhea's nickname is the French word for brothels is le clapier. So that was the other possibility, but nobody knows.
Yeah, but I can't believe that was Tennessee. That's so fucking what a coincidence.
I'm only gonna do a couple more. I just thought these were really funny.
Hey, you know what too, like I have a I'm sorry, the iTunes reviews it was doing most helpful first. Is that the most recent? So we got a couple.
Wait, what?
Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
I'm
how
sorry.
Many?
At least two?
At least two? That's your job, dude.
I know.
That's what you bring to this show.
I know.
Good Lord. Good night. We're not going to get through half of the shit we have to do.
No, we got two.
All right. Anyways, I guess I'll stop there. Man, there's so many more good ones.
Well, put a pin in for another day.
No. It'll be old by then. I won't want to do it then. But I'll just do a couple more then. Which one's
California. Do California.
Is Bernie Sanders vegan? They want to know.
Because that's so important.
Because that makes sense. No, these are the
is he going to win the superdelegates? Is he going to get the nomination?
Funny ones. Georgia's very concerned and wants to know why their nipples are sore.
Why my nipples?
West Virginia. I don't know about West Virginia. They want to know when is Cinco de Mayo, Drew? Concerning.
Stop it.
Very
that's
concerning.
Not fucking true at all.
Very concerning.
Stop it. I don't believe it. Cinco de Mayo, West Virginia.
New
nope.
York wants
lies.
To know is Mercury in retrograde?
Listen, and you know, we didn't even talk about it because you're saying I'm being all sensitive and shit, but like Mercury was in retrograde and it ended and Drew went into retrograde. I fucking like what's retrograde. The like the Midas touch, like everything he touches turns to gold. Like I've got the opposite, like everything I touch to turns to crap. Like it's been really just like I think I'm over it. I think I've passed the trough.
The trough.
Yeah, I'm on the up, maybe. We'll see. Podcast isn't over. I'll let you know in whatever minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see where else wants to know stuff. Illinois wants to know, what does OPP mean? Very interesting.
Other people's property.
Yeah. South Dakota, interestingly enough, wants to know, why is my poop green? Why is it?
Because you eat too much asparagus?
I don't know.
Green poop?
In Idaho, these are astute people in Idaho. Is Ted Cruz the Zodiac killer? They want to know.
I fucking love it. Was that John Oliver that did
Yes,
that?
It was.
They really Googled, is Ted Cruz the Zodiac killer? Brilliant.
In Montana, I'll only do two more after this. Montana wants to know how to move to Canada. I could see why. And then the last two for Hawaii and Alaska. Alaska, how to smoke salmon. In Hawaii, bringing it home. What is the meaning of life? Okay, so.
Really? Yeah. I'm existentially impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Hawaii.
Anyways, I thought that was pretty funny.
That's actually really goddamn good.
Yeah. So do you have the song ready or what's going on here?
Two, three, four, ain't got shit. 5 stars.
That's right, 5 stars. So
I'm sorry.
And
God damn it, fucking white people.
It's all over today, dude. I'm everything. I'm all the above.
You're all of the above.
I'm all the above. I'm all the jingles.
Your Mercury's in retro.
I'm everything, dude. I am it all. So we had a couple of reviews, and I did iTunes was being bitchy and didn't want to fucking sort by most recent rather than most helpful. Which I don't know what generates most helpful. I guess people say they like that review.
Yeah, anyway. People say that it was most helpful. You vote on it.
So I might have missed a 5-star review from BlackSteel99. I don't know, but BlackSteel99 said, "I love the show. Look forward to new shows. Keep up the good work. Love y'all." So thank you, BlackSteel.
Thank you.
And then we had another one. excuse me. From Blue Butterfly 24.
I like that name.
Leslie and Drew, give me hope for love.
Ooh,
this is deep. I love these guys. Their dynamic is lovely and gives me hope that we can all find a conscious, ever-evolving love. I find myself not willing to settle for less after listening to all these social justice warrior couples like Leslie and Drew and Karen and Rob. As a black woman, I now know that there is a way to be in love and also be committed to social justice together. Above everything, I have learned that you do not have to stifle yourself to find a partner in life. And as a young woman, this is so good to know. Keep up the good work, guys, and keep singing. Hugs.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to cry right now real quick.
I am going to cry.
Don't cry, babe. Aww.
That was the sweetest thing ever.
It was so sweet. What's her name? I love that name. Blue Butterfly 24.
And I'm,
thanks, Blue Butterfly.
I'm just going to say it was really well timed. Thank you for that, Blue Butterfly.
Thank you.
So this is from...
That's three now then.
Well, the one might have been... I don't know if I skipped it. I know that I read...
I never heard that one before, so you definitely skipped it.
All right. I'll take your word for it. This one's Aimbasami. Amba Sammy. I just started listening after a recommendation from the Black Guy Who Tips.
Oh, thanks, Brian.
The insightful commentary challenged me to think. I particularly appreciate Drew sharing his development and perspective as a white man who is actively working to be anti-racist. I'm recommending the portion from episode 91 where they talk about well-intentioned allies, noun, who don't understand how they are centered in the world and with people of color and how this can lead to harm despite good intentions. I wish everyone could experience this gem. Thank you, and please keep podcasting. Thank you so much.
That also
pleases me very, very much because admittedly it wasn't, easy for, I think, Leslie, that conversation we had, not on the podcast, but that enabled us to have the conversation on the podcast. Mm. I think there's maybe something we're going to be able to do from that. And I'm glad to see that it was valuable for you. That means a lot. So, again, thank you very much and very well timed. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Please clap.
That's all. 5 stars. Thank you, people. Thank you.
Awesome.
But I had to play fucking white people. I'm sorry. All at the same time.
Good Lord. So I did have the other thing that I wanted to. I'm just doing all the stuff I want to do anyways because I just feel like it.
Why not?
So I came across this amazing Beyonce parody. It's called Wand Up instead of Hold Up. And it's by.
Hermione?
No, it's by Hermione.
Okay.
And it's actually by the Storyscape is this group. And it's a black woman, black girl, and she is Hermione, but she's doing a Beyonce parody.
Wand Up. I got it.
Yeah. So it says, sometime between their 5th and 6th year at Hogwarts, Hermione and the brightest witch of the wizarding world completely lost her mind over Ron. And so love goes.
It's nearing midnight.
Star's pretty good.
You'd write, but I don't see no owls in the sky tonight. I smell your secret. Is she a prefect? Or is it lavender you miss? How did it come down to this? Thought our love was magic. I don't want to lose my pride, but I'm a crucio, a witch. Never know what I keep in my bag of tricks. So you better watch yourself before you join Headless Nick. Houseway, I love an immature Weasley and think he's amazing. Have I gone bloody crazy? Am I the one that's crazy? Let's imagine for a moment that we never met on Hogwarts Express or felt a threat or never played a game of chess. Never fall back, you know who, you never made the Quidditch team. Never had the baddest muggle help you with your wizardry. Would they be down to ride? Nah. They made a gaffe, you laughed at you. But y'all know, even serpents couldn't stop us. So Aurania exhumed. Miss Granger sang, wind up, I don't wanna have to hex you. But Ron, they don't love you like I love you. Repair all my broken heart thanks to you, boo. Keep on and I'll be off with Victor Crumb too. Can't you see they're using spell traps and potions? But our love was chosen, a vow that can't be broken. Wind up, looks like I'll just have to hex you. Cause Ron, they don't love you like I love you. Is this a game? Is love like Quidditch? Something to play? I got your snitch right here, right time. Keep those bludgers from your heart. Keep her wood, flying high like Olive Barr. What curse will be as awful as the Dursleys? Keep Ron away from hussies. I know, I'll spend the summer with the Weasleys. Turn Ron into a Porky, send witches to the North Sea.
I took off the bed and stepped on scabbers, but that rat was an animagus. Just like Xerius. I hopped up off the bed and stepped on scabbers, but that rat was an animagus. Just like Xerius.
That's funny.
Fantastical.
So cool. I put the link. I think I shared it on our Twitter as well. People can check it out there. But let's go.
Sweetness.
Let's start the show, I guess. An hour in. No worries.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So, this crawled across my timeline a couple days ago.
It's punny.
A stealthy, stronger line of female salamanders are skipping sex and stealing DNA from males instead.
Say that one more time.
Let me keep going. A paper published last month in the Journal of Zoology describes a self-cloning all-female line of salamanders that has maintained its genetic strength while evolving regenerative powers surpassing those of sexually reproductive peers. They live in North America from Southeast Ohio to Quebec, and within this species of dual-gendered sexually reproducing amphibians is a lineage of unisexual animals. This means that they're only one gender, in this case female, and able to reproduce by cloning themselves. Cloning is great for adding lots of new offspring to a population quickly, but species who reproduce that way tend to suffer over the long term because of lack of diversity. From an evolutionary perspective, the idea is that if you don't have sex, you don't stick around very long over millions and millions of years because you don't get genetic variation. This all-girl clan of Ambosoma has found a workaround. Most salamanders mate externally. Males deposit sperm packets for females to pick up. Through a mechanism science hasn't completely worked out, unisexual salamanders are able to sidle over and steal DNA from these packets in what Denton calls sneaky sex. The stolen genetic material triggers them to lay eggs virtually free of the unwitting sperm donor's genes.
So let me just make sure. So there's the normal fertilization process is sperms laid out.
Right.
And a female takes the sperm sac in the whole thing.
Yes.
And that fertilizes
with the sperm.
Her eggs.
Yes.
Inside her whatever.
Inside her, yeah.
And then she does whatever.
She lays eggs. Right.
This new breed.
Right.
Somehow, and they don't know.
Haven't
been able to figure out. Are able to utilize something from this egg sac to be able to use DNA in their cloning process so as to avoid the lack of biodiversity issue.
Correct.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And
amazing, really.
Yes, they refer to it as kleptogenesis, essentially reproduction by theft. On paper, it's the perfect way to reproduce, Den says. There are no males to take up resources. Every female gets to pass on all of her genetic material, but they still get a new shot at generic variation occasionally. The sperm stealing crew also appears to be supercharged salamanders. When their tails were cut off, the unisexual salamanders regrew them at 1.5 times faster than their sexually reproducing peers. Being able to regrow a tail quickly is a huge competitive advantage for them, as it's much better to offer predators an extendable limb than, say, a head. A lot of research is needed to understand how they're doing all of this, but this all-girl salamander crew is such an evolutionary anomaly that researchers are intrigued. These animals are such an exception to the rule for how we understand vertebrate reproduction. So every piece to the puzzle is interesting. So I just had a little, let's see here.
Lucy Liu, with my girl Drew, Cameron D and Destiny, Charlie's Angels, come on. Question, tell me what you think about me. I buy my own diamonds and I buy my own rings. Only ring your celly when I'm feeling lonely. When it's all over, please get up and leave. Question, tell me how you feel about this. Try to control me, boy, you get dismissed. Pay my own condo and I pay my own bills. Always 50-50 in relationships. The shoes on my feet, I buy. The clothes I'm wearing,
little hand for the salamanders getting it done. Independent women. I thought that was pretty cool.
It's pretty biologically amazing. It's
amazing. It amazing. They stole it. Mm. Unruly Rev on Twitter. I tweeted it out today that the story or yesterday, and she said, "Hey, that's what I did." She's like, "Well, we paid for them, so
we didn't steal it.
We didn't steal it, but."
Mm. So, have you ever heard of Congressman Mike Webb?
No.
All right. He's running for Congress in Virginia's 8th district, and he'd really appreciate your vote.
Money.
He'd also appreciate, judging from a screenshot that he uploaded to his own Facebook page earlier today, some alone time with Evione, the sexy amateur, and Layla Rivera, the tight booty.
Oh, no.
Yeah, my man took a full he didn't, like, do the zoom in and the cropping.
Oh, he didn't take out the top so they could see all his tabs?
Yeah,
dude, come on, man.
You can see, like, all his...
rookie.
His bookmarks.
You know, he was so... I'm going to take a screenshot. He was all pissed off and everything. Oh, dude, come on.
It was not good. Not good. And then I don't say it got like weirder, but like it was up for a long time, many, many hours. And then there was some cryptic weird update to his Facebook page that was really like, I don't know if it was meant to address the porn tab controversy, but I'll just read like a bit of it. It's very strange. Curious by nature, I wanted to test the suggestion that somehow lurking out in the pornographic world, there is some evil operator waiting for one in a gazillion, still one sentence, chance that a candidate for federal office would go to that particular website and thereby be infected with the virus that would cause his or her FEC data file to crash the FEC file application each time that it was loaded on the day of the filing deadline, as well as impact other critical campaign systems. One sentence. Well, the Geek Squad text testified to me that after servicing thousands of computers at the Bailey Crossroads location, they had never seen any computer using their signature virus protection for the time period required, or 4,000 antiviruses, 300 of which would require reinstallation of the operating system. We are currently awaiting their attempt at recovery of files on the machine accidentally deleted when they failed to back up files before reinstallation. A scenario about which Math Boyvo speculated openly to me before we were informed by the Geek Squad that that had indeed occurred.
Wait, what?
It goes on and fucking on and on.
Don't read anymore.
Hold on. So then someone reached out, like BuzzFeed or somebody, or Gawker, I think it was, that ran the story. And he kind of like wrote back and he's like, I'm going to like, it's again just like the weirdest fucking thing. It goes on like rambling. He talks about like literally like it's just bizarre. It's just bizarre. He's talking about how many Facebook likes he got, like 42 likes. It's up to 75 now. Like in his response, like what was going on? It's so bizarre and rambling. And it's like, he's talking about being a preacher's kid and like people are getting trapped in Nigerian scams and like talking about forcible sex. And it's like most impacting 70-year-old white girls. Like it's bizarre. It's the weirdest thing. It's like, thanks for clearing that up, I guess. I don't know what this guy's doing and running for office, but
I don't know if he's
good luck, Congress Mike. Good luck.
Speaking of our governments, last week, Thursday, Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards, Democrat, signed into law HB 386, also known as the Women's Enhanced Reflection Act, which ever so generously requires that everyone seeking an abortion reflect for 3 days on their options. Because we're stupid and we're women.
The fuck?
There's so many of these. You know, and I...
This is the 6th state to require this 72-hour waiting period. And what's more ridiculous, that name, though, Women's Enhanced Reflection Act.
Nah. And there's... This is a... So somebody... asked her, we didn't even talk about it, like what's the difference with the 40 million votes, like how come everyone's talking about the missing votes and all these people. It's absolutely gerrymandering, the fucking Voter Rights Act, the fucking voter ID laws. Like they've been chipping away at voting, most predominantly Democrat voting, and even more so like black and Latino and marginalized individuals. They've been eroding, and they succeed by like death by a million paper cuts. They take it away little by little by little by little by little. And all of a sudden you turn around like, whoa, fuck, wait a minute. They just decimated, like the Supreme Court just said like, well, the Voting Rights Act is kind of nullified. Like, yeah, you don't got to do that. That thing that you have to do for the last 50 years, it's okay. You're good. You get a pass. Don't worry about it, you 13 states that fuck with shit all the time. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And immediately, like SCOTUS was like one day and like 2 weeks later, there was like 9 bills introduced to do that exact fucking thing.
Yeah.
Right? So we know that's how they do shit and that's how things goes. And this is kind of the same way with abortion. Like, it's like, okay, I feel like they said, I say they, I shouldn't say they. I feel like at some point at a high level, pro-life individuals that were really trying to fight Roe v. Wade where there was a group that was like, okay, we're not going to overturn Roe v. Wade. What can we do? We can nick it away and nullify it by death by a million paper cuts. And this is one of those, you know, many, many things that are like this. There's some states where you can, when you go in to get information about an abortion, there's like different pieces of paper and things that can be legally presented to you. And it includes like fake ass fucking places that aren't abortion at all. Like you show up to this place to get like parent services and it says like, you know, like family planning and parent this and that, and you show up and they try to talk you into like giving up the baby for adoption and keep the baby and do all these things. Like there's like, they allow like trickery and scamming, right? To allow like, you know, pro-life individuals to prevent an abortion from happening. Like that's perfectly legal. And, you know, so is this. And now they made a law. They're going
to they also in Louisiana, you already have to have the mandatory ultrasound.
Is it a transvaginal one too? Some of them are fucking horrible.
I don't know if it's transvaginal.
It's like raping a woman.
I know. And you also have to have mandatory counseling sessions beforehand.
So look at already. They already had
it 24 hours. So they've just increased it. They're getting
chipping
like,
it away.
It'll just be a week. And it's like, it's just 72 hours a week. It's nothing.
I forget the last straw law that was passed somewhere, but when it was passed, I remember Planned Parenthood saying, this is now going to make the ability to it was the law was, in order to do abortion, your facility basically had to have like hospital like infrastructure.
Right, right.
You had to be almost as, you know, top notch as a hospital. And like, argue yes, no, whatever you want. You know, there are plenty of outpatient services much more invasive than an abortion that are done on an outpatient facility that doesn't have to have hospital standards. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like this wasn't, I'm not saying that it should or shouldn't, but it was very specific and selective to abortion. Right. And because of that, like you can't even have insurance now. Like you're not going to have all that equipment, all the things, like you're not gonna be able to do the thing that the law required you. It made one facility in an enormous radius,
right,
hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles in all directions. There's now one facility.
Right.
And I just, how is that a good thing? How is that a positive thing for women? How is that? And just this whole notion of,
I mean, you say that as if they really think that it is a positive
thing. You know,
they don't.
You're right, but this
they don't think that at all.
This blind,
they don't care.
This blind allegiance to, you know, like we talked about in our last episode, the couple that was basically like saving like zygotes, I guess,
embryos. Like, that's what they were literally saving, embryos, not zygotes.
Was the zygote one before the embryo or after the embryo?
I don't know.
Whatever, but they're saving like, and I'm not trying to like start an issue with like pro-life, this or that, but it's at some point it's the blind devotion to this being the concept of life, and it must be preserved at every fucking moment, every instance until you're born. And then the moment you're born, it's like, ah, fuck it. Like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, we'll allow the system and every other fucking law and every other thing to be against you in some way. You know, whether it's education, whether it's, you know, prison pipeline, all sorts of shit. They don't give a fuck about.
And beyond that, just the truth be told, that the reality of the situation is that this cutting off of the reasonable and semi-reasonably cost, you know, priced ways to have an abortion, it's not going to actually stop abortions. It's just going to prevent those that can't afford to simply pay for them to have them. Because trust me when I tell you that wealthy people will still have their daughters having accidents, still having situations that they themselves need to get themselves out of, and deciding rightfully, if they choose to not have children, even though they become pregnant. And so it's just ridiculous.
They'll just go to another country. They'll just travel.
They won't even have to do that. They haven't outlawed the doctors from doing it. What they've started doing is making it like you have to be, you know, a hospital facility. Great. So if you have a doctor who has credentials somewhere, they can get in and do it. That's what I'm
talking
about.
Right, yeah.
It's not like...
I got you.
They're not outlawing it like no doctor can perform them. That's not what the law is.
No, and you're right. There's enough people that if they have money, they know somebody. There's a doctor that has facilities, that has access at a hospital that'll get it done.
I don't even think you need a lot of money. You just need to be having like the best of healthcare has to offer.
Yeah.
Which these days is a lot of money, but.
Yeah, and I think again to Hiroshi's kind of comment, like, you know, how come everyone's talking about it? Like, what happened? Because it happens like almost slowly, you know, like it just they erode these things little by little by little by little until all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, this is really like this isn't good. This is almost in contrast to the nature of what Roe v. Wade was meant to be. Like,
right.
this seems. I can't believe this is the case. And how did this happen? It's like, well, it didn't happen like in one big thing. It was like, you know, little by little by little, they just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And they have I would say that again, there are individuals on the pro-life side that are highly organized, highly meticulous, highly, you know, just devoted to this. And they've got, you know, legal and all sorts of support. And they hammer away. They know exactly how many votes and what they need to do and what district and what town. And they just, you know, how far can we get it? Can we get it this far? No. Okay. Dial it back. Can we get it here? Great. Go here. And there is no loss. The needle's like, you know, it's a zero. It's already a zero sum gain that they've lost. The abortion's legal. We're over.
Right.
So now anything we can do to make it harder is a victory. And that number of things that make it harder are piling up more and more and more and more.
Yeah, I hear you on that for sure.
It's a shame. Did you see this thing about bank robbers in Japan stealing like $13 million on ATMs?
No. That sounds ridiculous.
Fake South African credit cards.
Huh?
Yeah. So thieves used 1,600 forged cards to withdraw more than 1,400 cash machines across Japan, getting almost $13 million, doing 14,000 transactions. So they did 10 transactions at every machine. 1,600 cards, 1,400 machines, 10 transactions. You know how many people that takes? And they did it in 2 hours.
Wow.
It was in 2 hours, dude. It was 2 hours.
You know, that's like some fucking, you know, only in Japan could they literally like systemize a theft of this nature. Because you have to be pretty fucking organized to get that much done in 2 hours. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So it was all sorts of weird stuff. So they used bank ATMs specifically from Seven Bank Holdings, which is the company that owns 7-Eleven. And 7-Eleven has ATMs in their
places.
There's thousands of 7-Elevens
sure.
in Japan.
So many. Oh, my God. They're everywhere.
Yes, I didn't know that. It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But so 7-Eleven didn't, and 7 Bank didn't suffer a loss, but the, obviously, the one bank, who was it? 7 Banks, one, two banks, the bank owned by 7 Holdings, came under 7-Eleven. Yeah, so it's South African credit card bank. But so there's only like so many machines. There's like 6, 7, 8 banks in Japan, and only 2 of them will accept foreign credit cards and debit cards. And this is one of them.
Oh.
And so they had, so it was really sophisticated. They stole these credit cards. They like, you know, had these credit cards made. They went to Japan, did it in 2 hours. It's like Ocean's 11, man. Like,
that's crazy.
Just like, and can you imagine, like, I don't know, again, like, you must have had hundreds of dudes.
Wow.
Because how many, like, just realistically, if each ATM, you're doing 10 transactions, card in, card out, that's at least, like, I don't know, you think, like, 5 minutes an ATM? That's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I would say that, yeah.
And that doesn't include travel between ATMs, right?
No. You'd have to, because how, I guess, hopefully they'd be in a
Let's say
small...
10, let's say 10 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, so you probably had like pockets of people, I would figure.
All right, but even so, you're only doing, you know, 10 to 12 ATMs in that 2 hours. So they'd have 160 dudes, 160 people doing, you know, 10 or more ATMs. And so that's 160 people doing 100 transactions at 10 or more ATMs.
Wow.
That's or maybe they just had lines of dudes. Well, they did say it was 1,400 machines. Yeah. Also, I bet you they had thieves go to each machine and do 10 transactions. Or they had the, you know... So many thieves spread it out, but that's crazy. Absolutely crazy. They got away with it.
They did get away with it.
Well, for now,
right.
13 million in ATM.
I guess that's true. So, you know how Hulk Hogan did this whole like lawsuit against Gawker, and it's like this whole to-do thing.
Huge, like it was like 80 million or something. 100
yeah,
million?
And you know they're appealing it, whatever. But it's been like pretty big deal, obviously, both in like, you know, First Amendment rights and all sorts of stuff too. But there was like rumblings that Hulk shouldn't have been able to afford this lawsuit, like to pay for the lawsuit itself. You know, you have to like outlay money and everything.
Oh, really?
And that there was some big, rich power player behind like financing him. And apparently, Peter Thiel, a PayPal co-founder and one of the earliest backers of Facebook, has been secretly covering the expenses of Hulk Hogan's lawsuit against online news organization Gawker Media. According to people familiar, and this is from Forbes, according to people familiar with the situation who agreed to speak on condition of anonymity, Thiel, a co-founder and partner at Founders Fund, has played a lead role in bankrolling the case Terry Bollea, a.k.a. Hogan, brought against the New York-based Gawker. Hogan's being represented by Charles Harder, a prominent Los Angeles-based lawyer. Of course, Thiel and his representatives declined to comment, but apparently he's openly supported Donald Trump. During the proceedings, rumors were, like I said, that somebody was backing him. And in an interview in New York Times, the Gawker founder, Nick Denton, said that he had a personal hunch that the financial aid could be linked to someone in Silicon Valley. If you're a billionaire, you don't like the coverage of you, and you don't particularly want to embroil yourself in any further in a public scandal, it's a pretty smart, rational thing to fund other legal cases. It's not...
This is out of spite? This is petty?
Yes. It's not illegal for an outside entity to help fund another party's lawsuit, and the practice, known as third-party litigation funding, has become increasingly common in the United States. Typically, the outside party negotiates for a defined share
Absolutely. Of
any proceeds from the suit. It's unclear how Thiel became connected with Hogan or Harder, or if Thiel is worth $2.7 billion by Forbes estimates, is the only outside financial backer of the cases against Gawker.
And think about Hogan's things like $100 million. It was a huge settlement.
It's nothing to this guy.
Not only is it nothing, if Hogan's like, oh, he couldn't afford the case. If the case was like, let's just say $5 million, I guarantee you the settlement is like, I'm first money in, first money out. So whatever you get, I'm getting paid. Right?
100%. I don't think, well, let me finish, because they don't even think money is the motivation for this guy. Again, he has $2.7 billion.
Oh, I hear you. But even if it isn't motivation, it's like patent trolling. It's highly successful. It's
definitely. For sure.
You throw a bunch of money out.
Yeah. And you're just playing the board. Absolutely.
It's not just playing the board. It's like, it's playing a game of something where the winning is like a grand fucking slam. You know what I mean? Like, you don't just win these things, like these patent suits and these things. $100 million is huge. All right, go on.
Thiel, who's gay, has made no secret of his distaste for Gawker, which attempted to out him in late 2007 before he was open about his sexuality. In 2009, Thiel told PE Hub, the now defunct Silicon Valley focused publication ValleyWag, which was owned by Gawker, had the psychology of a terrorist. ValleyWag is the Silicon Valley equivalent of Al Qaeda, he said at the time. Wow.
Tell us how you really feel, Peter.
So, anyways, I just thought that was some, like, slick A shit. Never even heard of that stuff. And that's when I know it's like, there's wealthy people, there's this people, and then there's people like this who are doing third-party litigation funding.
That's where you're...
Fucking hey, man.
When you are trying to, like, again, it's like, kind of like playing a form of lottery, but like not really, because you have a lot of insight. Like you see how good a case is or isn't. Like you have some other things. And if it's like you're petty and you're like getting some success and some, you're getting enjoyment. Like how many other things do you invest in? It's like money goes away. Maybe I made it. Maybe I didn't. And you have no fucking insight, no whatever. Here you get to fucking like see this case play out on fucking the news and fucking
TV.
But
I think beyond that, I think even if you don't get your money back, like you made them spend their money.
Absolutely.
That's worth it in and of itself. Like
that's my point.
That in and of itself is, that's my point. Valuable.
But so to your point, like in order to have enough money to do that, you've got to have a lot of money. Like you're finding, like you're at the point where your money is making you money, and the money that's making you money is making so much money, you need inventive ways to throw money away to try to make more money. And he fucking hits a grand slam with fucking Hulk Hogan litigation funding.
Mm-hmm.
It is just like patent trolling.
It really
is. It's just
is.
Like dudes that buy patents, and the only reason they buy it is to sit on it and wait to fucking sue somebody for some bullshit.
Totally. Totally true.
I don't want to call lawyers like scum and shit, but like...
Hey.
Listen, but patent trolling and... This kind of like, you know, like litigation, like, you know, I don't think there should be tort reform, maybe. I don't know. I just, you know, there's a reason all those jokes exist.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It's pretty crazy. Are we going on to, we got some weed news?
Yeah, we do
here?
Have some weed news.
Where's my?
Put the game clock at 4:20.
Smoke weed every day.
Weed news. This guy trained his bees to make honey from weed.
Say that again.
This man who really calls himself Nicholas Trainer, bees, is becoming something of a legend among both beekeepers and cannabis enthusiasts. He claims he's trained his bees to make honey from weed, and that's because he's been able to do what many have talked about, but no one has been able to pull off. He lives in France, and in addition to being a beekeeper, an artist, and locksmith, he's also an outspoken supporter of marijuana. For the past few years, he's been trying to figure out how to combine his love of cannabis with his love for bees. And now it looks like he's figured it out. He's managed to train his bees to make honey after gathering resin from cannabis plants. Check out the video below where his bees flocked some juicy, sweet cannabis flowers. I've trained the bees to do several things, such as collect sugar from fruits instead of from flowers. The aim arose for me to get the bees to obtain this resin by using what he calls a training technique whereby the bees collect resin and use it in the beehive. Nicholas and his bees have created the first batch of canna honey. Since this is a new phenomenon, nobody's had a chance to test the new honey to see how much the first cannabis makes it through the final product. But Nicholas says the bees' canna honey brings together the health benefits of both honey and cannabis. And in fact, the idea to make it was originally because of his personal reasons for using marijuana for medical reasons.
Okay.
And if it lives up to its name, it could essentially be the first ever all-natural cannabis edible. Yeah.
And, you know, he did it, it sounds like, by closer approximations to what he wanted, the end result.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw it, but there was the documentary about foie gras.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a guy.
That guy in, like, Spain or whatever?
Yeah. He's got an island. And I guess in a similar sense, he's made the geese a Shangri-La. So his island is just the most unbelievable place for geese to come. And they come and they get fat. He doesn't have to gavage them, doesn't do any of the things that you do to get typical foie gras from geese. And he doesn't kill them all. He thins the herd and they come back every year and they have more and they grow and there's a balance. And it's one of the first, I guess, like eco and sustainable foie gras farms ever. Mm-hmm. And it's only because he's like on an island. You know what I mean? Like they've got nowhere else to go kind of thing. So they keep coming back and he's made it really fucking happy. So despite losing 18% of the herd in some years, they come back because it's like, fuck, the dude's got like figs and all this awesome shit. Like he's made it the most unbelievable place for geese to ever be.
Right. Even when they went there, I think it was on like This American Life or something because these guys were trying to do a goose farm in New York and they had him come out and everything and they couldn't replicate it at all.
Yeah. They kept the geese would leave the farm.
Yeah. They didn't want to stay. So
you got to do it just right. And this guy with the bees has done it just right, too.
Apparently, he's worked hard at it.
Mm-hmm. If it came easy, more people would be doing it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't be fucking gavaging them, and you wouldn't have, like, apiaries where you trap bees and, you know, all that other jazz.
Yeah.
All that other jazz. Yeah.
So I think we were going to do a new segment today.
Oh, you know what? I don't know if I saved that on my...
What do you mean? You don't know if you saved it.
I'm sorry. Okay.
That's not what we're doing.
I know, but give me a second. So I'm going to let that play for a second. It's going to take me a second. I got to find it.
What are you trying to find?
The soundbite.
Oh, well, I can just play the song.
No, because I don't have you know the song? What song? No, that's not what I was going to play.
Why? That's what we agreed on.
Yes.
That's what I agreed on. You work hard for the money.
No, stop that.
So hard for the money. I can't.
We'll let the genres decide. No, I'm...
Okay.
She though, that's she. I don't know about she.
I said Drew.
Do I work hard for the money though?
I don't know.
That's there's some question there.
Dollar, 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 d
out because I don't know who I was thinking about or talking to, but I've had, I guess, 28 jabs in my life. That seems like a lot, I guess.
I think it's a lot.
I randomized them, and you're going to pick a number 1 through 28, and I'll tell you the jab and what it was about and what I did and didn't do.
All right. So I am going to pick number 1.
I knew you were going to start with number 1, so I put this job there specifically for number 1. But it's unfortunate because you've already heard the story. But Holiday Inn at the Portage, Michigan in Kalamazoo.
Oh, boy. What story are you going to tell about that?
It just was a crazy, ridiculous job. I worked at a Holiday Inn overnight from, like, I guess 11 o'clock at night to 7 in the morning. That was my shift. And my job basically was to drive the big green Holiday Inn van and go pick people up at the airport because it was a Holiday Inn airport, Kalamazoo, Michigan. You know? So like I'd have to go like, you know, like, hey, I'm at the airport. I go pick people up. And specifically because there was a flight crew, like a United or Delta flight that came in 5 or 6 nights a week and they needed somewhere to stay. So they had this like contract with Delta United to have this flight crew every fucking night
and go pick them up.
But they came in at ridiculous hours and this and that. So they had to have a van, go pick them up. So that was me. I was on for that specific task. And then like, you know, 2 in the morning, someone's like, I need a toothbrush. Like that was me as well. Right.
Right.
And like, if you got room service, like I'd tote that shit to you, but it was basically like really uneventful. Like I'd sleep, I fucking like, I'm not even kidding. Like I'd watch all the fucking movies on fucking like the fucking pay channels and shit, dude. I'd fucking shoot pool. I'd fucking play Miss Pac-Man. I'd fucking like, when I played pool, I'd put fucking towels in the ball return so I could shoot all night long. On Pac-Man, I literally like, I don't think I cleared it, but like I'd get to the point where they didn't even have the fucking ghosts anymore. Like they just didn't turn safety, like you hit the little button and like nothing happened, like my wrist would be fucking tired and shit. Like it was really bad. Like one time I fucking was in the hot tub at night. I probably was, you know, like if not smoking weed, like recently smoked weed, had like an open beer, and the GM or somebody caught me, and the GM like came in to like, you know, complain or say something to me. And I swear to God, I think my excuse was my roommates are smoking a lot of pot and I'm trying to smoke, you know, less pot. So I was hoping to, you know, hang out here because it's stressful. He's like, oh, I understand. You know, we support you. Like, I swear to God, it was like the most absurd job. There was a dude who got a DUI in the van that I drove, right? Like at one point, like went to go get somebody and like got pulled over, got a DUI. They didn't fire him. He just rode his bike to work from then on and like no longer got to like drive the van. And his name was like literally like Roger the Alcoholic. Like this was like, it was an absurd job. And there's a lot of crazy shit, but I'm trying to think what I'll say. All right, so you know that Beastie Boys song where they fucking, I think it's like Illmatic or I can't remember, it's Paul's Boutique, where he's like, if I'd known it was this kind of party, I'd have stuck my dick in the mashed potatoes. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's yes. Like it's a lyric from a Beastie Boys song. Right. So like that had recently come out and I'm at work and it's like night shift and I'm probably, you know, blazing. And there was a really cool place to get high that was like inside the road sign, like the thing on the side of the road that was like, you know, welcome to the Holiday Inn, like, you know, wedding for Joey and Tina. Like you could climb up inside it and blaze down and nobody would know you're in there. It was like an aluminum like tent. So I'm pretty toked and I'm walking in and we used to have these fucking like big conventions and conferences and weddings and shit, and somebody had a mashed potato bar where you could like put mashed potatoes in a martini glass and like sprinkle fucking chives and sour cream and, you know, cheese and shit, dude. Like a mashed potato bar. So that was there, and the event ended and the mashed potatoes were in a giant fucking bowl, like a big ass like huge like 20 inch like serving disc, like pounds of fucking mashed potatoes. And everyone's sitting around eating these mashed potatoes because it's like it was a mashed potato bar. They're not gonna like keep the mashed potatoes. So like staff are sitting around eating, you know, like mashed potatoes. And I walk in and I don't know what possessed me. I really like, to this day, I can't say like I thought at all, because obviously like if I thought I wouldn't have said it, you know, but I look right at this big bowl of mashed potatoes and like, you know, half a dozen people standing around eating them. And I'm like, if I'd known it was this kind of party, I'd have stuck my dick in the mashed potatoes. And I just keep on walking. And I'm like, deuces, just kind of like swinging door exit. Fucking this one chick who was the like food and beverage, like manager or VP or something.
She must have got so pissed.
Oh my gosh. She goes running up to the front. I'm sitting there like hanging out talking to Toby and she's like, what's going on, dude? And she's like, did you really put your dick in the mashed potatoes? I'm like, no, my God. Like, it's a song. Did you put your dick in the mashed potatoes? Like, no, we're eating the mashed potatoes. Like, I know. She was screaming, dude. I felt kind of, I was a little embarrassed. Didn't get fired. Still had that job. And that's not even like, honestly, like, at that job, like, I don't want to say that's, like, not the most ridiculous story, but, like...
Oh, it's not.
It's just straight not.
Oh, it is not. The most ridiculous story. Story is absurd, but we're going to move on.
Which one's that?
The table.
Oh, when I fell asleep.
Come on, dude. That story is, like, I almost don't believe it. It's that ridiculous. Like, I know it's true and I know it happened.
How am I not
going to
tell it now? How am I not going to tell it now? I'll give the summated version. Again, this super crazy job. They shifted me to morning and I couldn't do it. Like work at 7 a.m. I just was exhausted. Couldn't like shift to the morning. So I kept falling asleep and they were like, Drew, you gotta do this, you gotta do that. So I'm just wiped out. I'm so tired. I go into one of the like conference rooms and they've got it set up for like a meeting of like 10 people, like an in around like conference setup. And on the side of the room, off on its own, is one little like 6 foot table that they've draped where they put the like, you know, like the tablecloth that goes all the way down to a skirt goes all the way down to the floor. So I'm thinking I'm slick and I've got my little walkie talkie and I got my little pager and shit. And I crawl up underneath this fucking table and take a nap. I'm like, I'm just going to fucking fall asleep. I don't think anything of it. And I awake and, you know, I think I wake to the radio and it's like, as I'm waking up, I hear voices and I'm startled for a second and like instantly like bead of sweat comes down on my fucking brow. I turn my walkie talkie down and I'm listening. And I'm like, oh fuck, they're having a meeting. I fell asleep and they're having a meeting. They're having a fucking meeting. I can't believe it. I keep listening a little bit longer. I'm like, oh my God. It's like the whole management team. Like, Tom, I'm telling you, like, they're having like a fucking manager meeting in here. And it was one of those like, if it was a minute, it was an hour, but it felt like forever. And I'm just sweating, dude. Like, for real. Like, just pouring fucking sweat. And I do remember it being long enough that I unclipped the keys. I have like a big jingle jangle of fucking like keys to everything. And I unclipped it and I was like just minutes away from just walking out from underneath the table, putting the keys down, putting my radio
like,
down.
That's it. I'm out.
Like, it's been real. You know, see you guys. You know, I gotta go. But they ended. They finally ended and I fucking, you know, got out and someone was like, where have you been? I've been calling you all morning. I was like, sorry. What do you need? They changed the time. I'm on it.
Don't
Let's
worry
go.
About it, boss. I got you.
It was, yeah, that was crazy. But this job was, it was right at the right time.
It was something that's.
I saw this in the notes and I don't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Virginia student cuffed and suspended over stealing, in quotes, a free milk carton worth 65 cents.
How is that? Just
Ryan Turk, Virginia student, was slapped with a suspension from school after police say he stole a 65-cent carton of milk, except that he takes part in the free lunch program. Turk claims that a Prince William County police officer thought he stole the milk and approached him. When he grew upset with being questioned, the police handcuffed him for being disorderly.
What in the entire fuck?
I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I'm mad. Ryan's mother told Shamise told the news outlet it just went too far. They're charging him with larceny, which I don't have no understanding as to why they're trying to charge with larceny when he was entitled to that milk from the beginning. In a statement, a Prince William County School spokesperson said that Turk's behavior spurred disciplinary action, not the perceived milk theft.
But what was his behavior? Fucking being like irritated that you're fucking harassing him about a free fucking carton of milk? Like, who doesn't get fucking irritated about being harassed about a free fucking carton of milk? Whoever gets harassed over a free carton of milk? You should be upset. That's upsetting. And you're going to arrest him because of that? The fuck? You know, that's what right here, we had that thing that said last week about marijuana is no longer a precedent.
Yeah.
It just, they'll talk about it and reference it and they'll be a dick and then they'll fucking be a response and then they arrest you for the response.
Yep. Exactly.
They'll just be another, you know, they'll find a way.
It's terrible.
That's I say it's unbelievable, but it's not.
It's not unbelievable.
It's not unbelievable. It's just fucking ridiculous.
It's totally, completely, and 100% believable.
It's just fucking
lamentably.
These fucking cops, dude. It's just too much. Too fucking much. We need a palate cleanser. Where's my palate cleanser?
Well, some video came out of POTUS.
Oh, yeah?
Beatboxing while a Vietnamese woman raps. Let's check
this out.
That's
the greatest. Just the sound of that's amazing.
This is from The Roots.
Before I answer your question, why don't you give me a little rep? Let's see. Let's see what you got. Come on. Do you need like a little beat?
Yes, I do.
No,
actually.
No, go ahead. Come on.
Vietnamese or English?
In Vietnamese, of
in
course.
Vietnamese.
Now I won't know what it means, but just a short version, because I got to get going. Go ahead.
Tình hình một mình nhà lầu trên in dầu sang như vua chúa giật mình sự tình thiệt ra đen đúa mà đời vậy là hey it's been a crazy day khi mà ta nhắm hai đôi mắt xuôi mái chèo trôi với mây. My name is Sue Boy, by the way.
Well, that was good. See there? That's pretty good. What were you just rapping? What was your verse there?
I was just talking about some people having a lot of money, having big houses, but actually, are they really happy? So,
okay.
Yeah, a lot of things that people look at us and see like different thing and something they assume, or a lot of like stereotype. Like, you know, like me, Asian rappers, like looking at the cute girls and, you know, people don't know.
Is that what they think?
But for Vietnamese people, it's a different. They think rapping is not like for women.
Ah, well, that's true in the United States, too. I mean, I just mean that there's always been sort of sexism and gender stereotypes in the music industry, like every other part of life.
Look at Obese being all woke and whatnot in Vietnam, being like, oh, don't think we so good out in these streets. We sexist as fuck. Just so you know.
We're no better.
No better at all.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey, hey, hey.
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 White people.
God damn it.
Fucking white people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fucking white people.
This thing, I gotta pull it up. I'm still in
Metrograde.
Yeah. I'm not doing so good.
I should have maybe.
Should have took over everything. But yeah, so the Supreme Court.
I was trying to be off air and judicious and shit. I was like, oh, you know.
Nah, you can be brutal when I'm in Metrograde. Put a pin in that next time.
A good car.
Oh,
has to
commercial.
Fucking commercial.
So the Supreme Court ruled Monday in favor of a death row inmate in a case concerning race discrimination in jury selection.
Hmm.
So Timothy Tyrone Foster, an African-American, was on death row in Georgia for the 1987 murder of an elderly white woman, Queen Madge White. The jury that convicted him was all white.
That sounds like such a racist name. Like,
I know, Queen White.
Queen Madge White?
Queen Madge White.
Who's your mother? Who's your sister? What's that chick? The baseball lady.
What are you? Oh, the. I can't remember her name. From
what
Cincinnati.
Team was it?
I can't. Yeah, Cincinnati.
What was her name? Now it's going to bother me.
John is going to know it. And
no.
It's something Madge or something.
It's so bad.
But she was super racist.
Yeah.
But the jury that convicted him was all white. And 20 years after the sentence, his attorneys obtained notes the prosecution team took while it was engaged in picking a jury, including marking potential jurors who were black.
Her name
with
was
a B.
Marge Schott, by the
Marge
way.
Marge Schott, thank you. Written by their name. The focus on race in the prosecution's file plainly demonstrates a concerted effort to keep black prospective jurors off the jury. So they're writing a B next to black jurors. They're putting little notes. And Someone I have to give shout out to.
Like every prosecutor or lawyer, defense lawyer would do that though.
Well, but I'm going to give a shout out to Femme Esk on Twitter. There's a conversation her, I think, Reign of April were having about the prosecutor. Like, these were in his notes. Like, this went into the case file. Like, he didn't try to hide it at all.
No,
like he was just.
That's how he was trained to do his job.
Yeah.
Like, why would he do that?
That's what I said. It was his. You know,
that's what he was told.
He was so. Not concerned with it being a problem.
Because it wasn't a problem.
Yeah. That's fucking crazy.
The dude went to death row, didn't he? I mean, look, you don't get to the Supreme Court without a lot of court cases and moving and movement and movement. This whole time he's been in jail.
So, yeah.
Anyway.
It comes as a welcome relief. It was 7-1. And I kind of...
Clarence.
I'm not going to...
Just so you know. Just so you know it... Just so you know, that's what happened.
Sad trombone. The 7-1 decision comes as welcome relief as critics who say racial discrimination in jury selection persists across the country despite 30 years after the Supreme Court ruling potential jurors cannot be struck because of race. Does not vacate Foster's conviction, opens the door for him to go back to the Georgia State Court and argue for a new trial. That's likely to cause other inmates across the country with similar claims to come forward and seek a new trial as well. So the Munning ruling can provide new life to these so-called Batson claims in the lower courts and the issue of racial bias and jury selection. But for real, the dude kept that shit in his like notes.
Yeah. That's not smart.
No problem at all. Like, let me just file this. Mm-mm. B for black. There was a restaurant, one of the ones, I won't tell you which one I worked at, on this
but
list.
But now you're telling a story that I might have to call you to tell another time, because that's going to be on the list.
But I wouldn't tell this specific story.
How you know?
I just wouldn't, because it's a obtuse, nasty little story. But so, their dirty little secret, I don't know if they got caught. Did they get caught? I don't think they got caught. But everyone knew that was sort of passed around in the restaurant when somebody came in and filled out an application for employment, specifically a woman, but also men, but specifically a woman. You had to circle the word on the top of the thing said application for employment, and the word employment has 10 letters, and you were told to circle E to T and rate the individual on a 1 to 10.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Quality, folks.
Goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
POTUS just told you about that shit.
He did. He did.
You know.
So I don't know if it's exactly an apology per se, but I'm going to pull this up. Did you hear about Trudeau's Elbowgate?
I heard about Elbowgate. I heard he apologized a shit ton.
Yeah.
So I don't think we need to, like, it's not considered a This Week in Apologies because, A, like, I don't think he needed to apologize, and B, he certainly has he's fucking apologized. Like, that's enough of it.
All right, so I won't make it a This Week in Apologies.
He obviously has gone through all of these steps and is very, very, very contrite and super sorry.
I've never seen somebody apologize so much in my life.
Well, the thing is, like, that's
he apologized
like
for the apology,
but
the apology,
that's
apologizing.
The thing about, isn't that like a whole Canadian thing? Like, they apologize constantly.
They say sorry
a lot. They say sorry for saying sorry.
Sorry.
Like,
one of his apologies.
Isn't that what they say? Sorry.
One of his apologies was literally apologizing for his apology detracting from his apology on another thing. Like, literally, like, he apologized for his elbow apology detracting from the purpose of his visit, which was to reissue an apology.
Because they like to officially apologize for things.
Yeah. That was a lot of apologies for one man.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it doesn't make the cut.
Yupper, yupper, yupper. So I came across what may be, like, I don't know. I just feel like this young lady's spirit is like my spirit. Like, there's something about us that
kindred.
Yeah, like, she is me, I am her, even though she doesn't know me and I don't know her personally, but I just felt like
she's
been speaking to me.
I've seen the video myself now numerous times and heard it likewise. And there is there's a you know, a quality. I wouldn't call it a je ne sais quoi, because it's not a je ne sais quoi. There's a quality that I don't know if all Caribbean women do, but I do think many West Indian Caribbean women, but in particular Jamaican women, really possess. That's a, you know, some people might call it body, some people might call it confident. Like, you know, there's just a a quality, and I think all Jamaican women possess it, and some women possess it more than others. And when some women possess it more than others, they're just these little queen bosses, right? And you can see, like, Tess Ann's little daughter is kind of like that. Like, there's this little thing you can tell, like, oh man, that girl, she got it. And I know you had it. I've seen video and footage and pictures. I've heard people talk about you at this age, and this little girl got it too.
Yeah, she just totally reminds me of me. So here she is. She is at a radio station, and they're asking her a few questions on the air. She can't be more than six. That would be a max. Here we go.
Ask you, if you were prime minister for a day, what would you do for Jamaica?
I guess I would help build the laws.
Oh, you would help build the laws.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I would say no pushing black people because I'm black. Hello.
Okay, no pushing black people because I'm
hello.
Black.
Hello.
Hello.
That is so you.
I'm just giving hello. A quick shout out to her. She's just the best. I hope I could find her or something. But she just has been giving me life this week listening to her. And then I came across this other article that I thought was interesting. It's 7 tips to help you sustain a life committed to social justice, from fired up to burnout. And I thought it was pretty interesting. Folks might be interested to hear about that. So there's 7 things that they say will help you stay committed to social justice, and but not burn out. She's been doing these stone circles since 2007 in Mabane, North Carolina, at the Stonehouse, a retreat and training center on 70 acres of land. And so they address, one of their primary goals is to address the high rates of burnout among activists and organizers. So the first is to develop a personal practice. The second is to come back to your body. The third is to connect with the natural world. The fourth is to identify the specific causes of your burnout. And for that, they have a burnout inventory. They have 6 areas. So I'll just go through them really quickly. Workload, too much work, not enough resources. Control, micromanagement, lack of influence, accountability without power. Reward, not enough pay, appreciation or satisfaction. Community, isolation, conflict, disrespect, fairness, discrimination and favoritism. And the last one is values, ethical conflicts, meaningless tasks. Number 5 is tell your story. Number 6 is cultivate hopefulness. And number 7 is take a well-structured pause. I'll share the link to the article, but I thought it was really interesting. Things to think about.
Definitely.
People out there burning the candle at not even just 2 ends, at every goddamn end. It's kind of ridiculous. And then I did want to let folks know that we are indeed going to do a season recap of The Real World 31, Go Big or Go Home, at the end of the season. I know it's still on. I think it comes on Thursday nights, but we are caught up now.
Yep.
And have been slightly riveted by the shenanigans in the house. And I think we'll have a lot to say both about the goings-ons of these particular individuals. And then also I've had a lot of thoughts about the differences of the real world that I remember versus what we're watching now. So I want to
feel old as shit.
I
want
to get into, I mean, hey, like, you don't have to feel old. Like, we are old, so there's no need to feel it.
Watching real world makes me feel old as shit.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, they're like, what's that Dazed and Confused thing, right? They just stay the same age and we just keep getting older. So yeah, it's not good. And then I wanted to podcast Stan real quick for the Black Guy Who Tips. Karen and Rod were featured in Ebony.com this week. So exciting. The title of the article is Podcasting Couple Keeps It Really Real on the Black Guy Who Tips. And it says surround sound. Meet a married couple captivating listeners all over the country with their Charlotte-based podcast, Listen Up. And really, really amazing. They have a great picture of them and that whole interview with them. And it was really, really sweet. So congrats to them, and well-deserved. And definitely check that out, and definitely check them out. I'm sure all of you already listen to them, but just in case you don't, highly recommend. My favorite podcast.
Yes, definitely.
Highly recommend. Highly. So what else? So we are heading out of town.
We are. The road trip.
Road trip.
Road trip.
Road trip. And we're going to hopefully see some of our... Some peeps out
some
there.
Some tweeps, yeah. I know that Miss Epps was so disappointed when you didn't come on the last trip. Like, I felt like I sold her a fake bill of goods.
Fakeness.
I'm glad that's happening for real this time.
Yes, for real, for reals. So that'll be nice.
And you know, Dr. Sixfinger, she might follow you, but she doesn't know you, dude. She had to ask me. She's like, what's his handle? I go, it's Dr. Sixfinger Tim. You could have just told me what it is. I was like, it is. It's Dr. Sixfinger Tim.
Yeah, I didn't know it.
It's okay.
I wrote it. I started with Sixfinger, and then that didn't come up. So then I was
In fairness, I really do think it used to just be Sixfinger Tim. I think the doctor's a new.
Oh, it's
maybe
addition.
In the last like year a bit. Okay. You know? Yeah, I could be wrong. Tim, you could write us with all of your six fingers and let us know.
Or just tell us on Saturday so we can talk about it then.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's about it. What else do we have going on?
I'm trying to finish Fledgling.
Oh, yeah. Octavia Butler, yeah.
Now, is it the last book she wrote before she...
I think this is the last one. I'm not 100%. Don't quote me.
It's a shame. It's excellent. It would have been good to be a series.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if I have it, but I'm going to get it before we leave. The other book in Exogenesis. Okay. I finished the first one, which was Dawn, I believe.
Yeah,
Dawn. And the next one is, I think, Lilith's Brood.
Yeah.
So we're going to, and you've already read
them? I've read them.
But you're going to listen to them again, right?
Yeah, yeah, all absolutely. Right, cool. I love them.
So we'll have a little Octavia Butler road trip.
Yeah.
Oh, and we do have a few. And have you already read all of them?
I've read them before. DJ Alders. Shadow Shaper,
and because I finished
is now a New York Times bestseller.
Yes.
Congrats to DJ.
I did the audiobook with Anika Noni Rose, which is awesome. But you've finished all three, have you not?
I have. I've read all of them.
Okay,
yeah. And I can't wait for the next ones.
Maybe you can pick a book that we both haven't read.
Oh, I want to read that one, The Girl on the Train. Or
I have it.
One.
I have that.
Yeah, I know. So that's
okay.
What I'm saying.
Is it a mystery? What is that?
I don't know. I know it's going to be a movie soon, but I heard it was a good book. So
okay, we can definitely do that too.
Maybe.
Yeah, I look forward. I love audiobook and a car ride.
It's good. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, and then we'll be in Detroit in a couple of weeks for Allied Media Conference. We'll be co-facilitating a session called The Revolution Will Be Podcasted, all about podcasting and social justice. And I'll be moderating a panel called Shaping the Narrative, Connecting the Dots in Michigan with some amazing people from Flint Rising, Nayira Sharif, and Monica Patrick from We the People Detroit, and Dennis Black from Black Lives Matter Detroit will be on the panel to discuss all of the issues that we have in Michigan and moving towards working together to solve them. I'll be speaking about social media and social justice on June 30th at Mashable's Social Media Day in Philadelphia. And we're going to try and figure out our schedule to see if we can put together something there.
All right.
A little get together in Philly.
I'm here for that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want nobody fucking with me in these streets, sang children.
High five.